Welcome to the SB Live California podcast. Connor Morissette here with Lance Smith and Bodie Da Silva. Before we get going, I want to take a moment to tell you about something exciting for high school sports fans across the country. SB Live Sports has launched a free iPhone and Android app featuring the latest California high school sports news, scores, videos, polls, photos, podcasts, player rankings, and much more. With the SB Live Sports app, it is now even easier to follow your favorite team with real-time scores and news alerts, as well as video highlights, podcasts, photo galleries, rankings, game coverage, and much more. The app delivers all the content you want in one convenient place. The SB Live Sports app features exclusive content from on-the-ground reporters across the country, and it's your number one source for California high school sports fans, with coverage from reporters Lance Smith, Bodie Da Silva, and me, Connor Morissette. The SB Live Sports app is available at no charge in the Apple App Store and Google Play Store. Download it today. Lance, Bodie, I guess I'll say Lance, how are you first? Then we'll get to Bodie so they don't talk over each other. Lance, how's it going?
I'm good. How about you?
Good, good. Bodie, how are you?
Yeah, good. We're just another big week of sports, and we're getting closer to June.
Yeah, it's crazy. Right now, big game every day, it feels like. And then when the playoffs start for basketball and baseball, it'll be crazy. But soccer right now, I got to see a great girls soccer game yesterday. I can touch on that a little bit. Just a lot's happening. I'm going to watch Cathedral boys soccer today. They are, in some polls, the number one team in the country. So I'm looking forward to that. But I wanted to start, and I'm going to have the floor for a little bit. I'm going to try to go through this quickly with some football head coaching stuff. Just want to mention some of the jobs that have been filled and what I think about them. So first, I want to quickly start with St. Francis. Jim Bonds passed away from cancer, very sadly, and there was an interim coach there. But Dean Harrington from Paraclete, who was at Alamany, was hired there to coach Jim Bonds. He was friends with Jim Bonds. So I think, obviously, that's a great hire there to continue their tradition. I don't think that they'll be able to rival some of those Division I teams and really make a push for that upper level championship. But, I think just that hire makes a lot of sense, and I think Dean will do a good job. I like the Mark Serve hire at Westlake. I think anytime you can pluck a really good offensive coordinator from a really good offensive team who's been on the rise for the last few years, I think that's a good hire, so I'm excited to see what he does. The one hire that I didn't really love is Scott McKnight at J. Sarah. It was really fast, and I don't really think there's much juice with that. He's been their special teams coordinator for 10 years. Felt like J. Sarah had a chance to make a splash. I thought Josh Henderson would be a good fit there. I'm surprised he still doesn't have a job. I'll talk a little bit about him in a second. But, I mean, you look at all the Trinity League coaches. If you're a kid in Orange County, a really good football player, you know Mater Dei, you know Bosco. Troy Thomas has done a really good job at Servite. Anthony Roser lately at Santa Margarita. I'd be more excited to play for him. Orange Lutheran, Rod Sherman has proven, although it was a while ago, that he's a really good coach and can win in Orange County as an offensive coordinator. Remember, Orange Lutheran was the best team in 2006 in Southern California. But that Scott McKnight hire, I don't know. If I'm a kid in Orange County, I'm not really looking to go play for him, I don't think. So I don't mean to be too harsh, but that's just how I feel there. A lot of times when an internal hire happens, you look at like what Ed Ogeron did at USC. A lot of people wanted him to go after he was the interim, and it didn't work out. But usually the interim coach, there's some juice or something. You know, it's exciting. And last year, J. Sarah was 0-5, and I know he was McKnight was never an interim coach. But if you're going to hire from within, usually it's something like that happens where the guy is just too good to not have be the coach. And I know Ogeron never went on to be the USC coach, and that really made him sad. But he at least was an interim guy and had shown that maybe he'd have a chance at the job. With McKnight, I don't really see anything like that. So that's just what I wanted to start with. Lance, did you have any opinions on any of the Trinity League stuff or any of the hires in general?
Honestly, not really. It's a little out of my forte. Having not been around that long. So a lot of these guys have made splashes locally in the past couple of decades that I just, it's a little, out of my depth. But I will say, you mentioned Josh Henderson, and I'm sure you're going to talk about it more, but I'm just shocked with the job he did at Grace Brethren on the field, and also the way that program carried itself off the field. I'm just absolutely shocked that he's been unclaimed as long as he has.
Me too. And I thought the Scott McKnight hire made the Rod Sherman hire at Orange Lutheran look really good, because I was kind of unsure about that Sherman hire. He has ties to the school, obviously, but you thought maybe someone who's had more success more recently would be a good fit. Sherman did a great job in Colorado and won there, but I don't know. I'm just, my concern with him is, okay, 2006 is a long time ago. Can you win in today's Trinity League? So we'll see. But then Jay Sarah goes and hires Scott McKnight, and I thought, okay, well, the Sherman hire doesn't look as bad as I thought at first, because I don't think that McKnight hire is all that great. But, yeah, you mentioned Josh Henderson, and I've tweeted about this a little bit. I'm so shocked that he doesn't have a job. I'm with you. And people might think, because I tweet about him so much, that, you know, oh, Connor's in with him, Henderson's telling him to say this. No, it's the track record that speaks for itself. And I think if you're looking at someone who's built a program from nothing and it has risen to like a top 10 Southern Section status team, that's Josh. So I'm surprised he didn't get the Westlake job, although I like what they did with Mark Survey. I understand why he didn't get the St. Francis job. It's not looking like he's going to get the St. Bernard job. That might go to Damian Porter at Crespi. So maybe the Crespi job opens up and then he can go there. But man, I thought he, if anyone deserved a Trinity League job, it was him, based on what he did at Grace. But clearly that's just not how it shook out. So we'll see what happens there. But that's just what I wanted to start with. I think the most critical hire, or the hire that I'm most critical of, is Scott McKnight at Jay Sarah. And I hope I'm wrong and he goes out and does a good job. But you kind of got to play the game in the Trinity League. And Bosco does a great job of getting great eighth graders. So does Modern Day. And then both teams are known for bringing in some transfers. Is a great eighth grader going to want to go play at Jay Sarah? That's my question, and I don't really think so right now. But hey, that's, you know, he'll have the chance to prove us wrong, and we'll see. But I just wanted to start there with my opening take. We can move on though to some basketball. Lance, what's going on in the world of girls hoops? I know you got to see Corona Centennial. How do they look?
Oh my goodness! They not only looked amazing against West, and of course they've been amazing all year, unbeaten to this point. That was 16-0 on Saturday, but they did it with flair. I've never, in any capacity, you know, take this podcast to plug any of my content. But if you're a girls basketball fan and you want to see some highlights, go watch that highlight video against West Torrance from Saturday, because they're putting on a show. They're not exactly of the ball movement caliber of a lot of teams where it just keeps hopping. It's more of a drive and kick, drive and dish. And then one or two or three extra passes. But when you have as much guard play as they do with Jada Curry and London Jones and Sydney Summers, et cetera, the amount of times where you have someone get their ankles broken on the other team and drop to the floor, and then boom, around the back pass, and then someone drives baseline and chucks it behind their head to someone who hits a 25-footer, it's just absolutely amazing. And London Jones also had one of the plays of the year in their very last possession of that game, dropping best player on West and hitting a three right over her. So, and when I say dropping, I mean on the floor, dropping like James Harden, Wesley Johnson version. So I would check that out. Otherwise, not a ton of girls basketball movement. It's still really Modern Day, Centen, and Etiwanda are really kind of in another league. Again, not to say that no one's going to knock them off or there's not going to be another champion, but it's just been another week of those three kind of separating themselves.
Got it. Yeah, and we'll see what happens come playoff time. Bodie, let's check in with you. What's the latest in San Diego? I got to see St. Augustine play Saturday. I interviewed Malcolm Williams, their kid who's hurt, but played football, is going to University of San Diego. Really nice kid. He came on our halftime show when Modern Day beat St. Augustine, but they're a great defensive team. Offense, they struggled, but that was nice just to have some San Diego crossover. But what's going on by you? What do you want to talk about today?
Yeah, especially with St. Augustine the night before, they dropped a surprising one to San Diego High. So I think that was a big bounce back. Obviously, no one's beaten Modern Day this year, but they kept it a lot closer, I think, than most would have expected. And Saints is a team that, come playoff time, no one wants to see them on the same side of their bracket, even with a group this year that lost every starter from last year and really brought back very little experience. So last week I talked about how there was really a play-in game, the way it was going to be decided between El Camino and Modern Day Catholic. So El Camino ended up getting that win on the road and has really created separation to the point where I just think that there's not going to be any more movement. I think really the top eight teams are locked in at this point. And at the top, Torrey Pines has really created enough movement where they essentially are locked for the one. So there's some movement. I think the biggest battles are three teams fighting for 6, 7, and 8. Right now, those are Mission Hills, Carlsbad, and El Camino, and they've kind of played each other. I know El Camino and Mission Hills, they split, and Carlsbad and El Camino, they split. So those would definitely be good games if they were to match up. And then 2 through 5, Cathedral Catholic, San Marcos, who's still unbeaten, Santa Fe Christian, and St. Augustine. It'll be interesting to see as they play on here these last 2 weeks. I know Saints and Cathedral, they'll end the year against each other. And Saints took the first battle. So that's really the movement we have at this point. I think those top eight are locked in. And in Division Two, I think that's another really good battle. Orange Glen and Coronado have separated themselves from the pack. So that's another one I'm looking forward to. And Coronado's one of the few teams that can boast having two Division One players. Wayne McKinney down here has put up some huge numbers in games this year. So at the top, there's definitely some good battles to look forward to.
I don't want to put you on the spot. Do you have the projected top eight in the 1 through 8 order, or could you just give the eight teams who you think it'll be?
Yeah, so Torrey Pines is pretty much the clear one. Right now, Cathedral would be the two. San Marcos would be the three. Santa Fe Christian and St. Augustine would be 4 and 5. And they played each other twice and split, so that would be a really good 4-5 battle there again. Mission Hills at 6. Carlsbad at 7, who they played Torrey Pines really tough last weekend, and not really a surprise. Carlsbad's new staff has Clark Allard, who was an assistant at Torrey Pines, and Jackson Strong, who did Torrey Pines. So those guys are going to know them as well as anyone. And then El Camino would be the 8. So that's the 8 right now. There could be a little more movement, but as I said, I don't see any way for anyone else to jump in at this point and really just be shifting for position and who may get a home game.
Got it. Yeah, I think in the southern section, I think unless Heritage Christian beats Sierra Canyon on Saturday, which would be an upset, I think it's going to be Sierra Canyon 1 for boys hoops, Modern Day 2, Corona Centennial 3, Rebay Academy 4, St. John Bosco 5. Modern Day plays St. John Bosco on Thursday, though, so if St. John Bosco beats Modern Day, I think we could see St. John Bosco go to 4 instead of Rebay. But I think Corona Centennial has done enough. They've beaten every Southern Section team. Their only loss is Torrey Pines, Bodie. So I think they're going to lock in at 3. And even if Modern Day loses to St. John Bosco, I think they'd still be at 2, but who knows. And then I think Harvard-Westlake is going to get in after beating Etiwanda. And then I think Etiwanda and Damien get in. And I think that'll be the 8. Of course, if Harvard-Westlake drops a surprise Mission League game, I don't really anticipate anyone else losing, but Rebay plays Birmingham. If they lose that, that could see them go up. But I think Heritage Christian just has too many losses, so they're not going to make it. And then in Division One, I think it's going to be a real battle. I think Chaminade can make some noise. Heritage Christian can make some noise, although they're going to lose Isaiah Elohim to the USA national team tryouts or camp, whatever it is, in late May. So that could hurt them. I think St. Bernard will be in the mix. I think Roosevelt will be in the mix in Division 2 AA, which is always so good. I think Colony and Santa Margarita will be the favorites. And then 2A, I like West Ranch. So it's nice to see stuff coming together, because I've been tweeting out a couple of what I think the top 8 was going to be, and then there were upsets, and I looked like an idiot. So I almost tweeted this 8 today, but then I thought, let's just save it for the podcast, so that way if people want to listen, the record can be there and not online. But I really do think that's going to be the 8. And I think this year we've talked about it all along. I know Torrey Pines looks like the clear number one in San Diego, but I really think up here, any of those 8 teams have a shot on any given night. So when they do that round robin thing, it could come down to a crazy tiebreaker or we could see upsets and maybe we see a 6, 7, or 8 team advance to a championship. I really feel like it's wide open this year. So that's going to be a lot of fun to cover, and we'll see. But I think it's getting clear, just like Bodie, that it's getting clear for you. Do you think Torrey Pines is, I don't want to say a lock, but they're the overwhelming favorite, correct?
Yeah, I mean, certainly to be the one seed, they're unbeaten, and they have 4 remaining league games in which they're playing teams that are not close to the top 10 at this point. So unfortunately, their game, they were supposed to play Fairmont Prep last night. That had to be canceled. I don't believe it was anything COVID related, but at this point in the year, different districts are just being a little strict, especially on a game between different counties. So 4 games left for them. It would take a couple losses, I think, for them to drop out of the one seed. So that's not going to be the case at this point. But from then on, I mean, you never know. If Santa Fe Christian were the 4, that was a team who took them to double overtime early in the year. So come playoff time, you got to be ready for anything. And really, there's some teams that would have road games that I definitely think could win a first-round matchup there.
Lance, on the girls' side, it's still modern day, Big Gap, and everyone else, right?
It's more modern day, Centen, Etiwanda, and then everyone else. The rest of the open division could really, it's a lot less locked in, I think, than the boys' basketball that you guys were talking about in both Southern and San Diego sections. I mean, a conversation for another day would be about how those top teams match up with each other. Because if you're looking at what they do to be great, you know, modern day, Centennial, and Etiwanda, they're all such different teams. They play different styles and they're strong at different positions. But I think it's more, you have those 3 and then the rest of the open division could go a bunch of ways. There's a lot of teams that have legitimate cases. So many teams, I mean, there's teams that have played 20 games and there are teams that have played 7 games. And so many teams have only, you know, they're only 1 or 2 or 3 losses are all against that very top group. So many other teams could be in the picture between Roosevelt and Harvard Westlake and Windward, Sierra Canyon, Rosary Academy, Orangewood Academy, Camarillo, Gardena Sarah is rising. Oh, West Torrance is a lock to be in the open division. You have King, you have Chaminade, Fairmont Prep, et cetera, Viewpoint. Linwood is now surging, even though they've only played 7 games. I'll be at their game Saturday against Etiwanda. And so many of those teams, like I said, they've only lost 2 teams in the top, you know, 5 to 7 or so in the Southern section. So after those top 3 that we always talk about, it's going to be a little bit more of an open field. But right now it's just going to be interesting to see how the voters vote as far as who makes that open division, because there's about 12 teams there that all have pretty equal cases for the next top 5 spots.
Cool. That'll be very exciting. It seems like that's the only open division right now that we've talked about that is sort of up in the air. So it'll be a big last few days of the regular season. I think, are the girls' brackets coming out on Sunday? I know the boys are. Do you know which day the girls are?
I think Sunday, but I can't swear.
Okay. Let's go to some top performers. I'll start. I want to talk about 2 sports. First, in girls' soccer, I saw Santiago, the champs in D1 from a year ago, beat Los Alamitos yesterday thanks to goals from Autumn Tompkins, a senior from the penalty spot, and then from Crystal Medina, who is this freshman who I think is under 5 feet, and she's really small, but they call her the 4-foot Messi. And she scored one of the best high school soccer goals I've seen. She dribbled through like 6 players, got around the goalie, and then scored. And she looked incredible. But what awaits Santiago in the semifinal game is Harvard Westlake. And Harvard Westlake has sophomore Alyssa Thompson, who scored 6 goals against Temecula Valley yesterday. And she's like a future U.S. national team player. So that'll be a fantastic game. And Santiago lost to Temecula Valley, who Harvard Westlake beat yesterday. But I think Santiago plays really, really good defense after watching them. So I don't think Thompson will score 6 goals against them. But even though it's on the road, Harvard Westlake, I think, is the favorite in that game just because that team is so good and they're so good on offense. So I don't think I'll be able to get out there on Saturday. But that has the potential to be one of the best girls' soccer games in recent memory just because there's so much talent on both ends, led by Harvard Westlake's Alyssa Thompson, who scored 6 goals. That just doesn't happen yesterday in a quarterfinal Division I playoff game in one of the best playoff fields in the country. So that game I'm so excited for, because last year, like I said, Santiago won it all. They have the experience. They have a really good team. They're great on defense. And now they got to go up against one of the best offensive players maybe of our generation in Alyssa Thompson. That's how good she is. So I'm looking forward to that. And then in baseball, I saw Huntington Beach beat Los Alamitos before that soccer game. Sophomore Ralphie Velasquez, who was playing third but also plays catcher, he's committed to Arizona State. He caught my attention. The tricky thing with baseball, there are just so many great kids, so I didn't realize he's ranked as the 16th best kid in the state in the 2023 class. So I'm tweeting, oh, this kid's so good, and I'm sure a bunch of people already know about him. But it was my first time seeing him. And just the way he hits, you can just say, okay, this kid is a Division I hitter, maybe even a professional hitter down the line. He ripped a double and then 2 singles, had 2 RBIs. And whenever he got up, it was just like, okay, this is a different level. Made 2 great plays at third. I think Arizona State's getting a great kid there. To me, he seems like a UCLA kind of kid. So we'll see if Arizona State can hold on to his commitment. But I think he could be someone who ends up getting drafted and might even not even go to college. So really cool to see them. And Huntington Beach, that baseball Division I field in the Southern section is so good, and Huntington Beach looks like a team that'll be right in the mix. Although I'm still picking Jay Serra right now, but just wanted to talk about just those two or those 3 players and the games I got to go to yesterday. Bodie, we'll go to you. You got a top performer?
Yeah, for me, I mean, not that he's unknown, but Eastlake shortstop Marcelo Mayer, talked about him all year. And really, when you're ranked that high, it's hard to rise. But MLB.com's new draft rankings that came out today, he's now up to number 1 in the entire draft, which is pretty incredible. But knowing how good the soccer's been here in San Diego, the baseball has been so good. Soccer is as well. But their game last Thursday, Marcelo hit 3 home runs and now up to 13 on the season. And the section record's 22, which I'll be interested come playoff time if enough people are going to pitch to him, if they take the stance of, well, we're going to walk him and hopefully get everyone else out. But I know Hilltop last week, they decided, hey, we're not going to pitch around. We're not going to walk him. And in 7 at-bats, he hit 5 home runs. So they may be rethinking that in the future. But he's just every time he's out there, there's so many eyes on him, and he just continues to perform. So he's someone that it's a joy to watch. And as we head into July, is a name we'll hear more and more of when the draft comes up.
Do you know who has the record in San Diego? Is it a MLB player?
No, it was I'd have to get the name. It was someone on El Capitan, I believe, in 2002. But yeah, there've been a couple to get high 18, 19, about 20. I know Adrian Gonzalez was one of those years back when he was the number 1 pick out of Eastlake as well. So that would be pretty cool if Marcelo were to make it 2 number 1 picks from the same high school. I would doubt that's ever happened before. So
yeah, seriously. Lance, how about you? We'll finish with you. Any top performers?
Well, let's see. I have a couple. I've been a little bit behind you guys in covering spring sports, but one person who's been exploding onto my radar would be Sydney Summerdyke. I hope I said that right. Villa Park softball. She's thrown multiple. So Villa Park is 18-1. They've beaten so many of the big baddies from Trinity League to pretty much everyone. Their only loss is against Los Alamitos, which is one of the most stacked teams in the country. She's thrown multiple perfect games. She's thrown perfect games and complete games where she strikes out, you know, 20-20. She might have even had a game where she struck out every single player. She's an Arizona commit, and some of those games she'll throw a perfect game or throw a complete game shutout and then go 3 for 3 with the home run. So that's just been bonkers. And another person, I know we've been mostly in the SoCal, even though it's a statewide podcast, I know we usually stick to SoCal, but one player in NorCal for girls basketball who's just been going absolutely nuts is Natalie Pasco at San Ramon Valley. Not last week, but the week before, she had 2 40 burgers in the span of like 2 days. I think 87 points in under 48 hours. This week she's already off to, she's already had a 30-12 game, et cetera, et cetera. it's been a little hard to round up individual stats in this season, which is obviously, you know, understandable. A lot of coaches and stuff are you know, scrambling just to get however many games in their respective seasons as they can. But, you know, for those listening, just remember, you can go to scorebooklive.com or go to our app any single time. And if you have any trouble putting in stats or anything like that, we have dedicated people to help you. So it's never too late to get your individual stats listed and get those players the recognition they deserve. But that those are the two as of the past couple of weeks who have been on my radar.
Great. And you mentioned listeners. Shout out to Stringer over at the Daily News and the San Gabriel Valley Tribune, James Escarcega. He tweeted out that he listened to us last week and thought we did a nice job. So thank you, James. That was very nice. We appreciate it. Any final thoughts? I think I'm good on my end, but just anyone want the floor one last time?
There is a someone passed away in the softball community.
Yes.
Yeah, it was Carlos. I'm forgetting his last name. Let me pull it up here.
I think Carlos Arias is his name. Very, very sad, and a lot of tributes. I never met him. I actually haven't ever covered softball. Hopefully that'll change at some point. But I know just on the social media tributes that have poured in about him, pretty much everyone who works in our field had a relationship with him of some kind, and he just seemed like a perfect combination of a hard worker and a nice guy. So just very, very sad what happened. I don't think he's passed away quite yet, but the latest update was that he is going to shortly. They're going to, sadly, I think, pull the plug on the machines that are keeping him alive, and he dealing with the stroke complication. So, Lance, I think that you're right to mention that, and very, very sad day, or sad days will come too when he does pass away, because just an incredible, incredible man, it sounds like, from what I've seen. So really, really sad.
Yeah, between how much he helped develop the media landscape for softball, and of course it wasn't that long ago that a lot of the best girls athletes in the country were having trouble getting as much exposure as they do now. That field still has a long way to go, but between how much he helped develop that, and then, like you said, just the fact that it was so many people he only met once or twice, he clearly touched their lives with just his positivity and radiance on a personal level. You know, I wish I could say I've met him, since we're doing a 1 minute tribute on him, but clearly just a huge loss, and rest in peace and best wishes to his family.
Yeah, I think that just goes to show his impact. We never met him, but we're talking about him because he was such a great person. So very, very sad day. Well, sad to end on a somber note, but you're right, Lance, that we definitely needed to include that. So thank you for bringing that up. This has been the SB Live California Podcast. Playoffs are coming down the pipe for all the Season 2 sports, so follow along on our app and on our website, scorebooklive.com/California. We'll be covering stuff right up until the end. So for Lance Smith, Bodie DeSilva, I'm Connor Morissette. We'll see you next time.